Maud Lowry. And you can listen to that programme again by going to our website. Now on BBC Radio 4, in the first of a four-part series, we retrace journeys the author Daniel Defoe made in Scotland in the 1720s. Defoe was reflecting on the state of the country and the changes wrought since the Act of Union with England a decade and a half before. Sarfraz Manzoor looks at what he witnessed and how life has changed since, as he goes, in the footsteps of Defoe.
Sir, I am now just entered Scotland, and that by the ordinary way from Berwick. We tread upon Scots ground after about 3 miles riding beyond Berwick. The little district between, they say, is neither in England or Scotland, and is called Berwickshire, as being formerly a dependent upon the town of Berwick. But we find no towns in it.
Daniel Defoe wrote those words in 1724. They're part of a series of journeys he made for his celebrated book, A Tour Through the Whole Island of Great Britain. Although his travels took him from London to Land's End, he had a particular interest in Scotland. He'd been here for work several times, and he had famously been here some 17 years earlier as a passionate supporter and reporter on the Act of Union in 1707. Now, 300 years on from the Act of Union, I am revisiting some of those places that Defoe visited to find out what remains and what has changed since his time. I'm Sarfraz Manzoor, and while my journey will take its inspiration from Defoe, it will have a very different style. Defoe famously claimed that he was writing a description of places, not of persons. So reading his account, it's clear he didn't talk to many people. I want to do the opposite. What I'm hoping for in my journey in some of the footsteps of Defoe is to find out about the places I visit through the people who are living there. A prospect that might have surprised Defoe as he made his journeys.
Having passed this desert, which indeed makes a stranger think Scotland a terrible place, you come down a very steep hill into the Lothians. So the counties are divided.
Now the Lothians are those counties which nestle around Edinburgh and outwards towards the east coast of Scotland. I'm heading towards a group of villages on the East Lothian coast, Kirkenzie, Port Seton and Preston Pans.
There was a large ship at that time come from London on purpose to take in a loading of fish for Bilbao in Spain. There is great plenty of coal in the hills, and so near the sea is to make the carriage not difficult. The coal being thus at hand, they make very good salt at almost all the towns upon the shore of the Firth, as at Seton, Kilkenny, Preston, and several others, too many to name.
I'm leaving the fishing, a life I have known. The battle with nature that nobody won.
Now, back when Defoe was touring this area, Preston Pans was a hive of industry and commerce. There was a 16th century harbour, a 17th century glasswork, pottery in the 18th century, as well as the coal mining and the salt panning and the oyster dredging that Daniel Defoe describes in his book. So what a bit of a change now, and I'm joined by Amory Allen, who is a local historian. Now, Amory, just describe for me what we can see right now.
Well, I mean, I think you could start with the water. As you can see, it's very blue today, and there's nothing on it except one small boat. That would have been full of fishing boats and a lot of activity closer into the shore as well with the salt pans.
So give me a sense of what it would have been sounded like and what it smelt like and what it would have felt like when Daniel Defoe was walking around here 300 years ago.
Well, down near the shore, I think he would have had a great deal of air pollution, lots of smoke. In terms of noise, the industrial factories would have been making a phenomenal racket. The people themselves would have been filthy, hungry. It would have been a very hard, dull, dark life, I think.
And the industries that I was talking about, the salt, the fish, the oysters, were they the dominant things? Was everybody who lived around it or involved in some way with those industries?
Almost everybody would have been, women and children as well as men, would have been working in some kind of industry, making bricks, working in the salt works.
And it seems like it was dirty work, men digging out coal and...
It was dirty work and it was very dangerous work. The coal here is, once they'd exhausted what was on the surface, is in very narrow seams. So you would have had men lying in a space perhaps 2 feet high hacking out the coal. You would have had the women lugging it from sometimes extreme distances under the water and up the hills.
How different from that picture that you're describing is present day Preston Pans in this area?
Well, obviously the various industries are all dead now. But the people are still here. There are still family names here that you can trace back to the 1550s. Those people are still here, but they're not mining coal or working in the saltworks anymore. They're working mostly in Edinburgh or elsewhere. Preston Pans has really become a place where people live.
Now, as a historian, how easy is it to try and find remnants of the past in this area?
They are everywhere. The trouble is knowing what you're looking at in terms of what's still here. People do try to protect it. They are interested, but you might find down on the shore, for instance, the beach is still littered with remnants of the old industries. It's a place where you can walk through a museum, essentially, and pick up lots and lots of things that will tell you about what used to go on here.
You can see quite a lot of debris, old and new. There's plastic bottles, there's crisp packets. How, as a historian, how do you sift through the things that are important and the things that are just rubbish?
Some of them are easy, the bricks. And the bricks are actually a history in themselves because they're all stamped with the brickwork they were made in. I've got a piece of edging for garden paths. And I think this is interesting because they must have been making these from the very earliest days, because when the agricultural changes came, a lot of people were enclosing land and they were creating gardens for themselves and this sort of thing. So these must have been made here for hundreds of years.
It seems like the act of taking these objects is partly, I guess, to try and record and immortalise and remember this place's past, is it?
Part of it is to perhaps try to collect together the things that are here before they disappear forever. Some of the material I've collected is going to form part of a school's resource box on the potteries. It's here just for the picking up at the moment, but it does diminish as time goes by.
One of the other things that Defoe talked about in his book was the huge success of white fish trading in this area. And in its heyday, this was a flourishing trade. Now the only boats that go out are from Port Seton. And that's where I'm heading next to talk to Charlie Harkis, a local fisherman. What do you catch around here?
Prawns, just prawns now.
Is it just prawns?
No fish. There's no fish at all out here, none.
Why?
Well, according to the government, it's because it was overfished, but now there seem to be leaning towards the fact that the global warming, the feeding for the fish is all moving north, and obviously the fish follow the feeding.
This area, was fishing quite an important trade in this area?
I mean, go back to when I was at school and that, I mean, at that time there'd be 30 plus boats here and they all had six of a crew.
So there were 30 boats, six people per crew, a whole industry around. And what's it like now?
Well, there's 9 boats now and is it 4 of them are going single-handed.
Handed.
And the other 5 have got 2 men.
When you look at the kids who are growing up around here, they're not going to end up becoming fishermen, are they?
Nah, no, no interested. Too much hard work and unsociable hours, maybe.
So you're the last of the line, then?
Aye. My family, anyway. My father, grandfather, great-grandfather was all fishermen, and that's it.
So if we fast forward 20, 30 years around here, will there be anybody still fishing?
Nah, I'd say it'd be a marina. There's a train there, a marina. You know, the harbours are all marinas now, you know?
One of the ways that Preston Pans is trying to retain its identity is through the success of the Gothenburg pub. Now, it wasn't here in Defoe's time. It was established almost 100 years ago. And in its heyday, it provided a central meeting point for local miners and fishermen who worked in the area. The Goths' fortunes mirrored that of the community it served, and recently it's seen a revival. And to tell me more about that, I'm joined by Anne Taylor, who's chief executive of the pub, and Pat O'Brien, who's provost of East Lothian. Now, Pat, your family are from this area, aren't they?
Yeah, my family are from this area. They came here to work in the mines here. My great-grandparents, my parents, and my father all worked in the mines here.
Now, the mines were a very important part of the character of this place. So when they started going, what happened to it?
The mines went, the breweries went, the saltwork went, the brickwork went, and the pottery all went, all practically at the one time.
And what happened to Preston Pans?
Oh, Preston began like more of a dormitory town. Just living off the crumbs of Edinburgh, I would say.
Now, you're saying that it almost became this dormitory town. Where are the roots of the survival, or where do the roots of recovery come from?
East Lothian Council looked at Preston Pans, looked at the Gothenburg, and listed the Gothenburg in 1982. That was very, very important.
But where did the money come from?
The baron arrived.
So you say the baron arrived. Who is this baron?
I'll tell the baron is Gordon Preston Grange, who took the barony of Preston Grange, but I think you buy the barony.
So, Anne, is the baron, has he been a white knight for you?
I suppose he has been for a lot of us. A lot of people said there's not many people invested in Preston Pans, and the Baron of Preston Grange wanted to achieve, to share the history, to re-establish a microbrewery which sold local beers years and years ago and had a huge name within East Lothian and far afield. I think he wanted to sustain the hub and spend money within Preston Pans and not go out. I think that was the problem before. We didn't have a hub. People would go into Edinburgh or wherever and spend their pennies, and we decided that the pound multiplier had to be here, where people came, put the money back into the local community, and eventually when we make profits, which hopefully won't be too far away, the money will go back into the arts to help the local community, whether it's arts, writing or whatever, within the schools.
Now, we've been hearing about how the microbrewery has helped strengthen this area's identity in one way, and another way that it's being done is through art. When you walk around Preston Pans, I've been struck by the number of murals you see on walls, on the side of buildings. And with me here is Andrew Crummy, who's a local artist. Now, Andrew, what's the thinking behind all these murals?
The initial idea came from a town called Chimenez in Vancouver Island, Canada, where in the mid-80s, the hit hard times, and they started painting murals on the walls, and they now have a tourist industry of 400,000 people a year go to see the murals, and the town has been totally regenerated by this series of murals.
So let me give me an idea of the sort of things we're seeing. So for example, we're standing here against the supermarket, and on the side of the supermarket we've got this huge mural in kind of brown and white. What does it show?
What it shows is one of the aspects of Preston Pans, which is the salt making, because Preston Pans, the name comes from, part of it derives from salt and salt making. So this mural is to depict and to celebrate that history. It's like a coat of arms. It's just telling you the history of Preston Pans, salt, bricks, etc., etc.
Farewell to the haven, my heart it is sad. The drifters I'm leaving, they walk on the land.
But what of the future? The fear is that Preston Pans will slide into a suburban sprawl. New housing rises up to cater for the locals who commute to Edinburgh, even as people from Edinburgh move out to places like Preston Pans, therefore threatening the identity of the place. If fish, salt and coal was Preston Pans' past, Edinburgh might be its future, and it's where I'm heading next.
In the Footsteps of Defoe was presented by Safraz Mansour. The producer was Patrick Gregory. Fast, good food